I'm Margaret Feinberg, and this is the Joycast. Welcome back, friends, and I am so glad you're here. If you haven't heard, I recently started a new series on Instagram called Jammy Time with Margaret. So if you're looking for comfort, encouragement, and a few giggles, visit Instagram and enjoy these morning clips. I also wanted to give a shout out to some of our national heroes. That's you, mom and dad. You are amazing parents. And that's you, grandma and grandpa. You are amazing grandparents. The way you're transitioning and navigating this new life, I am so grateful for you. And I don't know if it's going to help at all, but we decided to take all of our scripture-based coloring books and dot-to-dot books and just make them $6 each at Margaret Feinberg's store. It's more than 60% off, and that's just so that you can have some affordable, fresh activity books for your kiddos. Now, I don't know about you, but I have been spending a lot more time with my spouse. Now, if you know Leif and I, you know we could not be more different from each other. His nickname is Anchor and mine is Orbit. And we joke that I drag him along and he holds me down. So let's just say we have a little extra tension in our marriage. And it is the most beautiful tension when we partner and work well together. But now, friends, we have been thrown into this whole new reality, this new world. Not only are we together now more hours a day, but we're also with each other in our stress behaviors. Those moments when individually, when we're feeling the whiplash of the latest headline or hear the news of someone we know and love who's now fighting for their lives. Or those days when the reality of what's happening just crashes in and overwhelms. And so we're having to love each other in this and develop new techniques to protect and nourish our marriage and relationship in this season. We're having to up our game in communication, to ask regularly throughout the day, where are you at right now? We're learning to express what we're feeling, even if we don't know why we're feeling it. We're having to learn to say, I just need space right now. We're having to acknowledge that this situation is making both of us feel fatigue. And so there are some days that means being honest and saying, I just need to call it a day and go to bed early. We're also having to identify our fears and say them out loud to each other as we recognize them. We're having to have more frequent and more intense, honest conversations with each other. And what we're going through, let's just be honest, friends, it can put a lot of stress on a marriage. But I also believe that this is a time when we can learn to develop new tools and techniques and communication and understanding and wells of compassion that perhaps we've never had before. But honestly, we can't do this on our own. And that's why I've called my friend, Ted Cunningham. He's a pastor, a comedian, a hoot, and author of A Love That Laughs, Lighten Up, Cut Loose, and Enjoy Life Together. And man, isn't that something we could all use right now? So I'm inviting you to pull up a chair to this practical, joyful conversation that will equip you to have a satisfying marriage even in this. Oh, Ted Cunningham, I call you Spaceman because you've been my friend for so long. It is such a delight and privilege to have you on the Joycast.
I've been wanting to be on the Joycast. You have no idea for how long. Oh, thank you for finally having me. I thought we were friends, but it's taken a long time.
Now, this morning, you busted me and you busted me hard. It was bad. Yes. It was bad. It was back-to-back meetings. You want to tell our audience?
Yeah, so I logged in 10 minutes early. I always like to be a little bit early to these to work out the technical glitches. And you were on the prayer call of all prayer calls with 100 and some odd female leaders from around the world praying. And I mean, they were praying for new dreams and new visions and praying against this virus. And in the background, I hear somebody doing dishes. I hear, and I'm like, what is going on? That call ends, and I find out it was you. You were making cappuccino.
It's so true.
You were making a latte. You were making a latte. Christine Kane is praying thunder down, and you are making a latte in the kitchen. Unbelievable. Low grades on the prayer call for you today, Margaret. Low grades.
Guilty as charged. But they were back to back with this interview, and I needed the coffee to be able to be up for the Joycast.
Now, my question is, did all those other ladies hear the latte making?
I don't know. I'm going to have to check in later. It'll be hashtag latte making prayer. Yep.
Latte making prayer. And you're sipping it right now. Enjoying it.
I am. It's delightful. It's delightful. Hey, so you, we met years ago when you, how did we meet? His name was Gary Smalley.
Yeah. It was almost 13 years ago, I think. I'm trying to go back to 2000. I think it was 2007. And we were in a meeting at Gary Smalley's, the Smalley Relationship Center, and getting ready to work on some projects. And little did you know, you would be spending 2-3 years tutoring me on how to be a writer. And I absolutely wore you out with my all caps responses. You remember that email you sent me? Ted, if you use all caps one more time in your writing, had we been face to face, you would have thrown something at me. I think you were you were so exhausted by my writing. But I'm a better writer today because of Margaret Feinberg, that's for sure.
Yeah, writing in all caps with 17 exclamation points does not make the sentence better.
But I got my point across. I think I got my point across. Oh man, those were good days. Good days.
Whew. But through that, I know I'm like through that. By the way, okay, so listeners, this is super secret. You never knew this, but I ghostwrote many Gary Smalley books, and if I tell you which ones they are, I might have to kill you.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, Gary went to be with the Lord 4 years ago. Can you believe that? And so, Amazing. Yeah, but he sure loved you, Margaret. You honored him well through all those times. That's for sure.
Well, we loved him, and still do. Now, through this, you're a pastor, but you're also kind of a marriage guru of sorts.
Well, I mean, my passion is to help couples. I like to help couples experience high levels of marital satisfaction. I like to help couples find ways to enjoy life more together. And so I kind of transitioned. I go between speaker and comedian with my events. And so I'm kind of stuck in between those two a little bit.
It's a good place to be. So right now we've had a little shift. I don't know if you've read or felt perhaps in our world. And all of a sudden married couples for many are spending more time together than they ever have before. I know that in our own church and congregation, we have spouses who would travel 2, 3, 5 days a week for work and are now not traveling at home. And you've got two spouses who are at home. We have situations where we have, couples who were already in kind of rocky places in their marriage, and now they're confronted with each other all day, or perhaps they're in a situation where the stress and the anxiety of lost wages, lost jobs, childcare, raising kids is challenging. And I'd love to know kind of just some basic wisdom and how to adjust our perspective in our marriages during this time.
Yeah. And I think during this time, like any other time, if you want to achieve high levels of marital satisfaction, you're going to get there far quicker if you go with emotions more than opinions. Let's go back a year to a couple wanting to come in the office and talk to me about their money, about parenting styles, in-laws, jobs, careers. And they both have opinions on how to move forward. And obviously those opinions are making them both opponents more than teammates. And what we try to do in pastoral counseling is to get to the heart of the matter, to get them on the same page as teammates, tackling whatever the issue is. And so one of the first things I'm encouraging couples to do during this time is to share feelings more than opinions. We all want certainty right now. We all want to know, when will we be going back to work? We all want to know, when will the paychecks start back up? When will the curve flatten? We all want to know and have timelines so we can begin making plans, but we're living in an uncertain time. So this is a great time to share feelings, to share. Amy and I are processing this in very different ways because we have different core fears. Amy, you know, her core fear, she doesn't like to be disconnected from. She doesn't like to be abandoned. I don't like to be controlled or to be judged or to feel like a failure. So everybody has different primary emotions. And I got the wisdom last week from a therapist friend who said, you know, each day ask your spouse, how are you doing, more than what are you doing? You know, we all want to get up and go after our plans, but we need to be checking in on one another right now emotionally through this time. And remember, I can validate your feelings when I disagree with your opinions. Healthy people are not threatened by the opinions of others. So I'm not threatened by the opinion. I don't want to be threatened by Amy's opinions. And I can listen to somebody's opinions and validate their feelings, even when I don't agree with their opinions. And when I disagree with your opinions, it doesn't mean that I hate you. It doesn't mean that I'm mad at you. I can have a completely different opinion than you on how we quarantine, whether or not we go to the store every day, how much we're going to spend, what we're going to budget during this time. But we just are encouraging couples right now, spend more time on the feelings level. Just listen, lean in, incline your ear. Don't try to fix your spouse right now, but spend more time listening to those feelings.
One of the things that you said that just popped out was you used that phrase, the core fear. And I've never really thought about that. You know, what is my core fear and what is my husband's core fear? I think somewhat like you, you know, I fear, or your spouse, I feel a little bit afraid of being abandoned, of being alone in this. What are some common core fears that people who are thinking, wait, I don't even know what my core fear is. What are some that perhaps can help them have the language for that?
Yeah. So I always start with helping couples. The core fear comes from the message written on your heart. Where was this message written on your heart? Or better yet, when was it written on your heart? Years ago. It's why we in therapy, it's become cliche, but hey, lay down on this couch here and tell me about your father. Well, I want to know what a pastor, a parent, a coach, a teacher, a neighbor, an uncle, an aunt said to you over and over and over and over again that eventually you started believing it. Gary Smalley would always say, you pretty much summed up your worldview by the age of 10. And you spend the rest of your life processing what happens to you through the messages written on your heart when you were very small. And so these create core fears, and how these play out, even in this time, I'll give you a great example. This time of quarantine, you know, Amy, because her core fear is disconnection, she's missing people. She wants to be back in the church with people. I'm processing it more from that controlled core fear of, I'm tired of the government telling me what to do, right? I'm ready. I'm going to have church when we're going to have church, and I don't need to be told what to do. We're both processing the exact same situation in very different ways emotionally. So other core fears would be the fear of feeling worthless, of feeling inadequate. Many are going to have the core fear of failure right now, and a lot of people are going to be feeling that, Margaret. And I just want to encourage them. You didn't cause the virus. You didn't cause the shutdown. If you're waking up at 1, 2, 3 a.m. right now and sitting on the edge of your bed feeling like a failure, you need to rest in the fact that all of this that is happening is out of your control. Some would have that core fear of not measuring up. Some have the core fear of being cheated. And you know, they feel like their work, you know, has made plenty of money off of their labor. So this is a time that my boss should be taking care of me instead of furloughing me. I mean, so everybody's going to process this. We've isolated through the National Institute of Marriage, which is now Hope Restored, that focus on the family. It's in the book From Anger to Intimacy. But there's about 27 core fears that we process. My core fears are being controlled, being judged, feeling like a failure. Amy's are disconnected, abandoned, and then rejected. Some people will feel rejected through this. But these are all primary emotions, keeping in mind that anger is a secondary emotion, meaning you always feel these core fears first. And this is what I'm encouraging couples to talk through and to process through. Don't look at feelings as a right or wrong issue right now. Look at them as something you can validate. We want to move to the confession of trust. If, for any pastors or church leaders that might be listening right now, if I can encourage them, for the same reason you and I, when we go to the hospital after someone has passed away, we don't sit down with the family in the waiting room there, the family room right there, and start giving them a lesson on death. Right? That's not the time. The time is to practice the ministry of presence, to listen to them, to encourage them, to remind them to eat. A lot of people that enter into deep mourning or grief need to be reminded to take care of themselves physically, but I don't need to give them lessons on death. And that's one of the things I've been sharing with couples too. There's a lie I think we need to journal through this time that we don't need to share during this time. I don't need to meet with a couple right now who wasn't prepared for this financially and give them a Dave Ramsey course on getting an emergency fund together. Yes, it'd be easier to go through these first few weeks with an emergency fund, but if they don't have it, that's a lesson we can teach later, right? This is a good time for listening and letting people share. I had a lady the other day say, I'm fearful right now during this. Does that make me a bad Christian? And I'm going, I hate that you're even thinking that. No, you need to be able to share that. I want you, like the lament psalms, get to a confession of trust. I want us to get to that confession of trust, but let's listen to people and what they're feeling right now and help them work through that.
What you're tapping into is the importance of communication in order to have a thriving and flourishing marriage right now. What are some quick tips you have for our listeners to up their communication game during a time where they are feeling, you know, moments of spiked fear, anxiety, unknown?
Yeah. So I think we're all conditioned right now. We're conditioned to only listen to things we agree with. And I think a lot of that is, you know, we listen to cable news networks that reinforce our biases. The algorithms on social media push news to us that fit our biases. So it means we're only listening to news we agree with. And that's conditioning us as listeners to only be emotionally responsive to people we agree with. Well, if you want to be a good emotional listener when your spouse is sharing feelings you can't understand or you can't trek with, that's a good time for you to discipline yourself to make eye contact, body to body, distraction free. I'm listening with you in mind. I like how Dick Both puts it. When I enter a conversation or I enter a room, no one likes the person that enters the room with the "here I am" mentality. We prefer that person that walks in with the "there you are" mentality. And so a good thing, enter that conversation with "there you are" with your spouse, like focusing on them and where they are. And a practical way to do that, Margaret, is to repeat back to your spouse what they're saying word for word. And if you've ever done this, we've all done this, where we say back, so what I hear you saying is, and you share back with your spouse what they're saying, and your spouse responds with, "That's not at all what I'm saying." Oh, well, it's because you just put your nonverbals and your body language into it. And about over 90% of our communication is in the nonverbals and in body language. So keep repeating back until your spouse looks at you with those eyes or with that nod that says, "Yeah, I think you're finally getting what I'm feeling. I think you're understanding what I'm going through." And if I can just say, we're blessed right now with time. Right? Good communication takes time. Speed is the enemy of intimacy. It's the enemy of good communication. So we've got time to sit there and let your spouse talk without fixing anything in them, to just let them share what they're feeling through this time.
One of the things that I've been wrestling with Leif is how differently our needs are met. I think each of us have core needs and there's ways to meet them that are healthy. And so I know the other night, Leif needed to watch a comedy. It had been a full pastoral day. These are long days. I think a lot of people think their pastors aren't doing anything. I don't know. My husband is working 10 to 12 hours a day, you know, nurturing and helping our community during this time. And he was just maxed out. And so he watched a comedy. But honestly, it was the last thing I needed. I needed to go and just go to bed. And so I just said, hey, you get your needs met. I want to give space for that. Other days it may be playing Xbox, or other days, you know, for me, it may be going for a walk, but making sure each of us are trying to get our needs met. That kind of old concept of put your oxygen mask on first. What would you speak to our listeners regarding that?
So it's the idea of one thing. When I do a marriage conference or marriage retreat, and you know, someone's going to take 6, 7, 8 pages of notes. And I'm like, the worst thing you could do is leaving this conference or retreat and get in the car and say, I want to tackle these 12 things. Because it's like New Year's resolutions. You put 12 out there, you're probably not going to do one. So focus on one thing. Amy and I have this one thing a day. What one thing can I do for you today during this time? My wife is passionate about that Marie Kondo woman tidying up on Netflix. And that my wife has two love languages, acts of service and quality time, which means I serve her for long periods of time. That's what those two love languages together mean. But in the middle of it, she has a decluttering love language. And I call it the pitch, pitch, pitch love language. And so last Friday, she handed me a garbage bag and said, would you please, this was my one thing for that day, would you please go into the closet and put 25 items you don't wear or use anymore in this bag? And I didn't do it. The next day she said, have you done those 30 things for me yet? I said, what 30 things? I didn't do it. By Monday, we were up to 35 things that I needed to put in that bag. And I went in the closet, gathered 35 items I don't need anymore, put them in the bag. And to just watch her light up when I walk out of the closet with this big garbage bag, I mean, she just lit up, because for her, decluttering in the home, it is a physical, emotional, spiritual lightening of the load. Less to take care of, less. And she says, you have no idea. When I see that bag, it's like a weight being lifted off of me. And so when we say the one thing, and you just described it with Leif, you, for him to stay up and watch a comedy while you go to bed, that's a weight being lifted from him. And I would just ask your spouse, again, the whole day is yours. We'll do whatever you want to do today. No, you can go to your separate corners of the house and get some space from one another so you can be fresh when you come together. But ask, what's one thing that would be super helpful for you today that would lighten the load, that would release this weight, that would fill you up during this time? And I just think, again, we always say marriage skills transfer. They build on one another. It's kind of like Dave Ramsey's debt snowball, right? You just, let's do one thing and watch these accumulate as the days and weeks of this, cooped up time together go along.
Ted, Leif and I have sat down and made a list of things both for now that we're going to look forward to on the calendar each day, because, and then also when this is over. We have a, when this is over, you know, I'm going to go swim in a public pool. I'm going to Costco with my dad and eating a hot dog. I'm running a half marathon because I went to Costco so many times with my dad. I need to run a half marathon. But we also have now made a list of little things to do each day that we can just enjoy, or just a little joy bombs in the midst. Baking fresh bread. Leif baked his first loaf yesterday and it came out like so weird looking. I was like, I think it looks like the coronavirus. It was just a naughty mass of bread. Today his bread looks beautiful. We're gonna have naked lunch sometime this week. Like, we're planning these things that are joyous and fun. And the importance of that also, that it is a time to carve out even a few minutes to celebrate your spouse and enjoy being with them. What wisdom do you have for listeners about making those celebratory moments in the midst of what can be a hard and stressful time?
Yeah. So for Amy and I, it's always been part of our marriage and part of our home, is we have to laugh together every day. We have to find ways to laugh together. And You know, in comedy, we call it the callback. You know, if you think of your favorite comedian right now, and comedy is pretty simple as far as a formula: premise, punchline, premise, punchline, premise, punchline. Your favorite comedians can often give a premise and a punchline in one sentence, and it plays off of. My favorite comedians are like Jim Gaffigan, Brian Regan. But a callback is where you take a punchline from earlier in the set and you bring it off of a new premise or a new story later on. And it usually gets a bigger laugh, because that's all laughter is. It's shocking the brain. Comedy shocks the brain, and that's what causes a person to laugh. And so we have what we call callbacks in our marriage. I'll be honest with you. I've been watching some of these press conferences and some of the things politicians are saying. I mean, I'm praying for all of our leaders. But there's some comical things coming out of these press conferences, and they become callbacks in our home, where I can get 20, 30 laughs off of one statement, knowing when it dies down. Amy and I have made it a point to continue to prioritize finding ways to make one another laugh. Amy has what I call a silent patriotic laugh. When she finds something funny, she places her hand over her heart, she leans forward, and nothing comes out. And my goal is to see how many times a day I can get her to laugh, because Henry Ward Beecher, 19th century preacher, said, a person without a sense of humor is like a wagon without springs, jolted by every pebble on the road. And we just want to maintain our shared sense of humor through this time. And I would encourage couples to develop that during this time, to find ways, whether it be sharing a meme, whether it be sharing something that was said, make them callbacks, bring it back later on in the day or in the evening, but continue to find ways to enjoy life together during very difficult and stressful times. Couples who learn to laugh and have a shared sense of humor not only manage stress better, but it helps them navigate through difficult conversations. And you don't have to become a comedian to do this. You just have to look for the funny that's all around you.
So good. Now, one of the things that it is a little heartbreaking during this time, but I want your wisdom on this, is, you know, I recently read that domestic violence in our state has gone up about 30% in the last week. It has just jumped up. What wisdom do you have for those who might be in that situation, or maybe fearful that their spouse, you know, as they emotionally respond to the situation, you know, depression and anger are so coupled, but that there can be that outburst? What would you say? Or if the person listening is the person experiencing that?
Yeah, I think it's important for us. You know, I read up on this last night after you and I shared briefly about it yesterday, from West Virginia to Los Angeles to Salt Lake City, where you are. And, you know, the concern is for the homes where there was already a cycle of abuse that existed there, power and control, that now it's more exasperated because of all of this. The concern isn't so much if you were a peaceful couple before this, that you're going to turn into an abusive couple through this. I mean, that is going to happen. There will be cases of that, but that's not the primary concern. I would say what I would say before this crisis. It's interesting to me, Margaret, how so much of what we're talking about during this crisis, it's like, is this new? We need new ways to do it, when not really. It's still the wisdom and teaching and counsel we would give people a year ago, 5 years ago, that if you're in an abusive situation, my first thing would be to say, anybody that finds themselves where they're fearing for their lives, to immediately, no matter what order is in your city or state, to immediately find new shelter, to find new help. And I know that's easier said than done, but we're talking about life. If your life is threatened, seek help immediately, even beyond a phone call. Get somewhere safe. If you find yourself stressing during this time and taking it out on your wife, your husband, or your children, I want to encourage people. Our church is doing it. I don't know if your church is doing it, Margaret, but our counselors have gone online, and we can do teleconferencing. We can do Zoom. We can do FaceTime. to work with people who are thinking I'm a threat to myself, or I'm a threat to others. We have two real issues going on in our culture now. We have the virus, which is one thing, but now we also have the fear pandemic too, and the uncertainty pandemic of people. You know, we're worried about the mental health issues. We're worried about the relationship issues. We're worried about potential suicides and this. I mean, so we have to clearly make ministry available to those who are stressing. And I just want to encourage you, still have to reach out for help. Even though you feel stuck and alone, isolated, helpless, you're not. There are still people that can help you. The stay-at-home order is to stop the spread of the virus, but it's not meant to keep you in a situation that your life is threatened, or that you know you're going to cause major damage to yourself or someone else. So you still need to reach out for help, and you can do that through churches, through ministries, through hotlines, and if it's immediate danger, obviously local authorities. I would still give that counsel. If a couple's in my office, and I feel that when they leave here, the conversation that was had, that there could be anything physically threatening to one or both, I can't let them leave. I mean, I have to deal with that. I've called ambulances for people who are suffering from mental illness who I think will harm themselves. So we still have to minister in that way. It's still not a hands-off ministry. We want to lean in and help people stay safe and recover from this.
So good. So good. One of the things we always do on the Joycast, or love to do, is to ask people for a recipe. And I was wondering what recipe you would like to share with our listeners.
Like food recipe? Margaret.
No, recipe for anything.
Oh, a recipe for anything. Oh my, I just stressed. Literally broke out into a cold sweat. A recipe for food. I cracked two eggs open. I do make a shake. I could give the recipe for the shake, but I'm not going to do that. So let me give you a recipe, tried and true, and it's communication, and I think it's simple to remember. Gary Smalley taught this to me 13 years ago. The day he taught it to me, you know, it's one of those things, it went deep into my soul. It's never left, and it's what I try to use in every conversation, and we call it Love Talk, L-U-V, Love Talk, and it stands for listen, understand, and validate. If you want to lean in and be a great listener, the L for listen means you're not sharing your feelings or opinions. You're not looking at your phone. You're not looking at your watch. You're not distracted by children, devices, or environments. You're completely focused on what the other person is saying, your spouse is saying. Then the understand is where you repeat back word for word what they're saying. You ask questions for greater understanding. And stay on the understanding until you get that nod from your spouse, like, okay, yeah, you get what's going on. And then the V is validate. I love the validate, because you park your car in a garage, you go in and, you know, have the restaurant or the store stamp it. All that restaurant store is saying is you were here. And in these times, if you want to become an A+ listener, just listen till you get that stamp that says you are fully present, fully understanding what was going on in my heart during this conversation. And if you start becoming that kind of listener, I've just seen it happen over and over and over again. It causes the other spouse to want to do the same. Okay, now I want to do that for you. Listen, understand, and validate. Love Talk. It's a great tool. Recipe. We'll call it a recipe.
Ooh, I love it. I love it. Now, if somebody wanted to see just a little clip of your date night comedy tour, where would they go and see that online?
You know, they can Google. They can Google it. I know I have several clips out there on it. It's on PureFlix. If you have PureFlix, you can watch the whole set. But yeah, you'll have no problem. If you Google my name, you'll find several clips. And trust me, I'm writing a bunch of stuff right now. Like, can I leave you with one of my favorite, Margaret, this is so good. And it comes from an 84-year-old retired missionary in our church. I was in Panera Bread getting ready to meet her for coffee. I was meeting her for coffee when I was writing the book, A Love That Laughs. And I was on the section, stop trying to be funny and start looking for funny. Because I hear it all the time from people. I'm not funny. You know, I tell people, when we wake up in the morning, Amy doesn't get out of bed and go, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Ted Cunningham. I mean, that's not how our day starts. I'm not telling jokes to her, but I'm looking for funny. So I told this to the lady in her, she's 84. I said, Pat, have you seen anything funny lately? What's the last thing you saw that was funny? And she said, Ted, you're never going to believe it. It was yesterday up in Springfield while I was getting my mammogram. And I went, oh boy, where is this going? She said, you know, I got it at Mercy Hospital and they have verses all over the walls, everywhere you go at Mercy Hospital. I go, yeah, I know, I've been there. And she said, what verse do you think they have hanging on the mammogram machine? And I go, I have absolutely no idea, Pat. What's the verse on the mammogram machine? She said, 2 Corinthians 4:8, for we are hard pressed on every side, but not crushed. And I about spit my latte out all over the table. Anyway, Pat, I put that in the book after she told it to me. And I said, Pat, you mind if I share that? She goes, I would be so honored if that became part of a comedy set around the country. I go, it is most definitely in there. So that's from 84-year-old Pat Kershaw.
So good. So good. And you can find that story and so many more in Ted Cunningham's great book, A Love That Laughs. Lighten up, cut loose, and enjoy life together. And man, there's no better time than all of us could use that than right now. Thank you, Ted, so much for being on the Joycast.
You are a dear friend, Margaret. Thank you for having me.